The jury in former President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial begin deliberations today. We look closer at this story with Randall Eliason, former federal prosecutor and current law professor at George Washington University. Thanks for talking with us, Randall.
Good morning. My pleasure.
So can you tell us the major points that the prosecution and defense presented in their closing arguments yesterday? And did one side feel more successful in convincing the jury?
Sure. The primary defense was a reasonable doubt defense. The defense spent most of their argument attacking the prosecution's primary witnesses, Michael Cohen in particular, and just arguing to the jury that there wasn't that the prosecution hasn't met its burden. There wasn't enough evidence to show that President Trump himself had been involved in creating these false documents, or that he had knowledge that they were false, or acted with an intent to defraud. Or even that the documents actually were false themselves. So they kind of attacked several different legal points of the prosecution's case and argued the state hadn't met its burden. And then prosecutors were just emphasizing that they'd put together this really comprehensive story of what they characterized as election interference. This wasn't really about false documents. This was about a scheme to keep information from the voters, and it was carried out through a number of different illegal methods, not just these false documents, but illegal campaign contributions and other false records that were filed concerning taxes and bank forms and things like that. And so an overall pattern of a conspiracy to interfere with the election, of which these false internal records of the Trump Organization were just one part and kind of one of the last parts as a way to kind of cover their tracks, according to the state. So I thought overall the prosecution had the better of it yesterday. They presented it was kind of a marathon session they went on till almost 8 at night, but the prosecution presented a really compelling, consistent story, a narrative of the case and this illegal scheme, and the defense seemed a little scattershot. There was some kind of internal inconsistencies with the things that they were arguing, couldn't seem to quite settle on a theme. So I thought yesterday the prosecution put on the better case.
You know, just picking up on what you said, Professor, there's a reason TED Talks are 13 minutes long. That's because that's the attention span of our brains now. How does a four-hour closing argument sit in the mind of a juror?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's certainly listening to anybody talk for 4 or 5 hours has got to be a challenge, right? So I think the prosecution certainly could have tried to condense things a little bit more. According to the judge's observations anyway and the things that we heard, the jury stayed very attentive, alert. I think they know the gravity of this case. You know, and we're probably willing to cut both sides a little bit of slack in terms of the length of their arguments. But I don't think there's any question that this could have been a little more concise, for sure.
Now, the judge...
I don't think in the end, that's not going to decide the case, you know,
right. In
the end. I mean, the jury's not going to acquit or convict because of the length of the arguments. But I think that's a long time to listen to anybody talk.
Now, the judge is telling the jury today their instructions on how to go forward. One of the things that the judge is telling them is not to think about potential sentencing. How is a jury, especially with something that's as high profile as this is, we've never had a criminal trial for a U.S. president before. How is the gravity of this going to weigh on the jury?
Well, I think it's unavoidable. I mean, they're human. You know, that's going to be in the background, I mean, of everybody's mind. But certainly the judge and the lawyers, I mean, everybody is going to be, the judge is going to be instructing them, you got to treat this just like any other case. You know, the fact that he's the former president and candidate to be president again shouldn't really enter into it. It's just about the facts and the law, as if he were any other criminal defendant. But of course, like I said, the jurors are human, and everybody knows the kind of backdrop against which this case is taking place, and it's going to be a pretty, you know, serious thing for them to be involved in when they're back in that room deliberating.
You know, Professor, there's not a huge amount of debate as to what the former president did, but the state has to prove that he intended to defraud. You've been arguing along in your blog that how do you prove intent to defraud? You think the prosecution did that?
Yeah, that's definitely the weakest point in the prosecution's case, and that's what the defense was trying to hammer in yesterday. I do think they've certainly given the jury enough to find proof beyond a reasonable doubt, given all of the circumstantial evidence about Trump's involvement in this scheme and the sort of implausibility of any suggestion that he didn't know exactly what was going on. But the intent proof does rely quite a bit on the testimony of Michael Cohen. So for that, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to how the jury found him on the witness stand, despite a long history of lying repeatedly about a lot of things, including lying under oath. That doesn't necessarily mean the jury won't credit him in this case. It's not uncommon for prosecution to put on witnesses who have, you know, some baggage. And that doesn't mean they won't believe what he said on the stand, but that certainly gives the defense their strongest attack point, is that, look, whatever went on here, you know, the president was former President Trump was a busy guy. He wasn't worried about things like bookkeeping entries and how these records were being entered in, you know, whether they were said they were legal expenses or there was a retainer or not. He didn't worry about stuff like that. I mean, he wanted to know where his money was going. But this is really just kind of a trivial bookkeeping offense that the state is trying to dress up as campaign interference. And there's no real strong evidence other than the word of Michael Cohen that President Trump had anything to do with that, even if he was involved in the hush money scheme. And even if the relationship with Stormy Daniels did happen, there's no real solid evidence that he knew anything about these particular false documents that are actually at the center of the case. So that is the strongest point for the defense. And if there is a hung jury or even an acquittal, I think that kind of argument will be the reason.
How long do you think the jury will take with their deliberations?
Well, it's always impossible to say. I was just thinking about that this morning. As a trial lawyer of folklore, I'd say Friday afternoon. and there's no real basis for that. But lawyers always say juries like to come back on Friday afternoons because they finish up for the weekend and they get their final lunch together before they return their verdict. But that's really, like I said, that's just kind of folklore. There's a lot of charges here, and it's a really serious matter, so I would certainly expect a couple of days. I don't think they're going to come back, you know, at the end of the day today or anything like that. I think by the end of the week is reasonable. And if it starts to roll over into next week and I'm the prosecution, then I'd be starting to get a little anxious about whether they're getting hung up on something.
Mm. All right. Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure.
That is Randall Eliason, a former federal prosecutor and current law professor at George Washington University.